On this episode of the Concast, we're going to discuss the Conor McGregor injury. Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday to you. My name is Connor Collins. I am a registered massage therapist and sports injury therapist. And welcome to the Concast, a podcast where we discuss all things health, wellness, and injuries in an attempt to better understand the human body. This is episode number 77. And for episode number 77, I wanted to discuss the Conor McGregor injury. I've discussed injuries to other professional athletes or major injuries before on the podcast. And this past weekend, Conor McGregor suffered quite an injury in his fight against Dustin Poirier. So I thought we would break that injury down a little bit, discuss some of the implications and potential implications for the rest of his career. So for those of you that don't know, Conor McGregor is a mixed martial artist from Ireland. I'm sure the majority of people that have listened to the podcast or that are listening to this episode have heard his name in some way, shape, or form. He was the most grossing athlete of last year and has his arms in a number of different business ventures as well, but was most initially recognized anyway for his emergence in mixed martial arts, which is a combination of stand-up martial arts and ground game martial arts, and has become quite the popular sport in the world. So on Saturday, this past Saturday, July the 12th, was the date he was fighting another mixed martial artist named Dustin Poirier. This was their third fight, and in the previous two fights, they had swapped wins, so they were tied at 1-1. And as a result of this, there was a lot of hype around this fight. So what happened in the second round of the fight is essentially Conor broke his leg in quite a traumatic fashion, where the leg broke and essentially snapped in half from underneath him, and he tried to take a step and his ankle essentially wasn't where it was meant to be, and he fell as a result of that. And these always, during professional sporting events, lead to quite gruesome images because the cameras are always there to capture it in multiple angles and offer slow motion replays of every aspect of the fight, which leads to a lot of information post-fight as to what might have happened from an injury standpoint. And the interesting thing about this isn't the first time that we've seen this year, and this isn't the first time that we've seen such an injury in the sport of mixed martial arts. So the first time this really happened on a large stage was back in 2013, when a fighter at the time named Anderson Silva, who was a very well-known fighter in the UFC, did something similar where he was fighting somebody by the name of Chris Weidman and broke his lower leg in a similar fashion, where he kicked the leg of his opponent, Chris Weidman, and the leg broke in half. And this was, again, on December 13th of 2013. And he didn't return to fighting until around 14 months later. January of 2015 was his return. He was 38 at the time when he returned. But for all intents and purposes, Anderson Silva pre-injury was almost unstoppable. He was considered to be one of the best fighters in the world. He was continually winning in very exciting fashion. And following this injury, he was just never quite the same. Now, he was 38 at the time and on the tail end of his career. He did have some other mixed martial arts fights as well as some boxing fights, and he even continues to fight still now. But he was never really quite the same, and this brings about the fact or the argument as to whether or not Conor McGregor will be able to really respond from this injury and become a great fighter again, or whether this is a career-ending injury for him. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. The other thing, the interesting thing, is during that fight in 2013, Chris Weidman, well, oddly enough, Chris Weidman actually had the same injury happen to him this year on April 24th, where in similar fashion, he broke his lower leg as well and had to have a similar surgery and is now in a similar recovery process. So he is only about 2.5 to 3 months into his recovery process. So we can't really look at whether he's going to be able to return and fight at the same level that he once fought at. And it appears as well that Chris Weidman's career was, again, approaching the tail end of his career, and not necessarily that he won't be able to fight again, but maybe not at the same level. So really the concern with these injuries, these large injuries that are quite dramatic and seen in dramatic fashion, are these career-ending injuries? And that's the ultimate question that everyone wants to know with respect to Conor's career, is he going to be able to continue as a fighter, or is this the tail end of his career? So it's really interesting to do a little bit of research and look at sort of all of the circumstances surrounding this injury in the lead up to the fight. And 2 weeks prior to the fight, Conor's team actually met with Dr. Neil Eletrash, who is a orthopedic surgeon in LA and is quite well known and responsible for the management of the majority of the Los Angeles professional sports teams. So he is a consultant for all these sports teams. And they met with him because the ankle on the leg that was injured had been bothering him for a few weeks near the end of his training camp. And he was getting sort of this nagging ankle injury that wasn't really going away. And at that time, they did do an MRI, and they weren't really sure whether there was something there or something not. And this is according to Conor's head coach, John Kavanaugh, in an interview that I had seen with him. So he was dealing with an injury to that left ankle area. There may or may not have been something that showed up on image, but it was clear at that point, based on the fact that he was able to fight, that it wasn't something obvious that they were overly concerned with at that time. And now looking back, who knows whether that was the right decision or not. We see this a lot in sports where athletes will make decisions based on performance, and then they may suffer a more major injury. We saw this in the Kevin Durant injury in the NBA playoffs a couple of years ago, where he had a calf strain. The athletic and medical staff felt as though he was able to come back and play. And then in the game that he returned, he actually tore his Achilles tendon and ultimately was out for a substantially longer period than he would have been if they might have let him heal a little bit longer prior to return to play. So this isn't the only time that we've seen this in sport where someone will go into action with a nagging injury. Now, did they know whether or not there was a microfracture, stress fracture there? I highly doubt that they would have known that definitively, because the chance that they would have allowed him to fight, if they had have known what the diagnosis was, would have probably been slim at that point. But we never really know. All we know is the information that's really being given publicly. So the fight begins in the first round, and going into the second round when the injury happened, essentially what happens is they are exchanging blows, they're exchanging punches and kicks, and at one point throws a kick, and I can't remember if this was in the first round or the beginning of the second round, but Dustin Poirier checks the kick. And what that means is that as someone's throwing a leg kick, and in mixed martial arts, leg kicks have always been used, but more so in the upper leg, and what we've seen in the sport is this transition in technique and in styles. And in speaking with some of my other friends that are more well-versed in the sport, what they've said is, as of recent, people have been having a lot of success with this calf kick, which is kind of this lower leg kick to the outside of the leg, which catches the posterior aspect of the calf, so particularly the soleus and gastroc muscle, but it will also catch some of the muscles of the shin. And fighters are using this to kind of render and control power of big punch fighters. So they're trying to kind of kick down the leg. The lead leg is where a lot of power development comes from through the punch. And they're trying to keep fighters kind of on their back foot. And we've seen people have success with this. Now, Dustin Poirier, oddly enough, in the last fight, or interestingly enough, in the last fight against Conor, used the calf kick to really break down Conor's lead leg and ultimately led to his success in the fight. So Conor's style typically in the past was not to use a lot of these calf kicks, but he came out in this fight using a lot of them, which is, I find, always interesting when somebody beats you and then you attempt to beat them using the tool that they use to beat you, rather than maybe sticking to an alternate plan or playing into your strengths. That's just sort of an interesting aside. So what happens in the defense of these kicks is the kick is being thrown with sort of the narrowest part of the ankle, so the narrowing part of the tibia, the inside leg bone, and the fibula. And if you don't check the kick, then it can start to kind of irritate and aggravate the muscular tissue around the area, and that can lead to pain and obviously a loss of strength. So fighters will check the kick. They will try and alter their leg position to make the kick less effective. So they might lift the leg and turn it to the outside to check the kick, or they might lift the leg and bend the knee. And as a result of that, the narrower part of the kicking leg ends up hitting the wider part of the tibia or the proximal part of the tibia. And this allows the kick to be less effective. And it can also inadvertently create injuries to the kicking athlete. When Dustin Poirier was interviewed after the fight, he had suggested that it was one of the checked kicks early on that he knew he had fractured his ankle or leg. Now, this could just be Dustin Poirier just saying this after the fact, so we don't actually know. But what you do see is that when you play some of the tape back, there's a point in the fight where Connor throws a leg kick that would be around the level of the knee. Dustin Poirier checks the kick, and you actually do see the leg fracture. And it's hard to say whether both bones are fractured at that time or not. But what then happens is Connor steps back onto the leg. There's an exchange of a couple of punches. So at this point, he's still able to bear weight to some degree on the leg. He throws a punch, and then after throwing another punch, he goes to step back on the leg. And there's this sort of torsional force that goes through the leg, which the leg can't support itself because it's broken. And this is where you sort of see the leg fold and then him fall backwards, which leads to some of the more gruesome images of the fight. So the injury itself is known as a compound tibiofibular fracture. And what that means is he broke both the lower leg bones right in half. So the fibula is the outer leg bone. And often if you break your fibula in isolation, you can still remain to be quite functional because the fibula itself only bears about 1/8 of your body weight. The remaining 7/8 are bared by the tibia. But in this case, he broke both bones. So he wouldn't have really had any support and wouldn't be able to develop any power. And even if the leg didn't fold under itself, there would have been some point only a few seconds later where he probably would have had to pull into guard or drop to the ground like he did without falling, and the fight would have been called off. There's just no way he would have been able to continue even if that particular incident didn't occur. Now, along with the bones that were broken, there's also many different muscles in the lower leg, along with three major nerves that branch off to feed the leg and the foot. These include the tibial nerve, the superficial and deep fibular nerves, and all of their branches. And then there's also major blood vessels in the area, the anterior and posterior tibial and fibular arteries, as well as all of their branches. So what would have been done immediately after the injury, as you can see by the tape, the fight ends and the medical doctors come in, and Connor is alert and verbal. He's obviously in some discomfort, but in terms of other people that I've seen with these injuries, he's relatively comfortable. Now, immediately after this injury, you want to kind of go into emergency care mode. You want to ensure that blood flow is able to get to the foot. So they might have done this through something known as capillary refill, where you simply press on the foot and you look for the color of the foot to revascularize itself, which typically is about 3 seconds normally. They may have also checked the pulses of the foot, the dorsal pedal pulse, which is on the top side of the foot, and the posterior tibial pulse, which is sitting behind the medial malleolus, which is the medial ankle bone. And they would have just wanted to make sure that the arterial supply was still flowing to the foot, and there wasn't something known as an acute compartment syndrome, which can happen in acute substantial injuries, where blood can rapidly increase in the fascial or connective tissue compartments. And this would be a medical emergency, and this pressure accumulation would need to be dealt with quite quickly via surgery to prevent any long-term or sustained damage to the soft tissues in the lower leg. The other thing is they would check function. They would ask Connor if he could move his toes, maybe move the ankle depending. And what they want to see is whether the nerves that are supplying the foot are functioning or whether there might be a comorbid neurological injury. They might do some sensory testing as well. Can you feel this? And they would have followed this up at the hospital with obviously more medical grade testing. However, in the field, so to speak, these are some of the things that they would have done just to make sure that blood flow and nerve supply was still functioning, ruling out things like compartment syndrome, and then applying a brace to the leg, which they did. They basically applied sort of a walking boot type splint, and then they took him off on a stretcher. The other thing that you always want to be mindful of that wasn't really apparent in this situation was shock. Are people going to experience sort of coldness and clamminess, substantial pain, sweating or diaphoresis on the skin? And if somebody's experiencing shock, or we always generally want to treat for shock, we want to put them in that recovery position. If we have to wait on emergency medical staff, or we want to put a blanket on them to keep them comfortable, apply oxygen if we've got it available to them. And so there are a number of different things you can do from an emergency care perspective, depending upon the particular circumstances that you're in. But that immediate management is brace, control any bleeding if there is any obvious external bleeding, which there was not, and then look at function of the foot before you're able to get to a location where you can get some more testing done. In this circumstance, what happened was he was brought to the hospital, and then the following morning, he had a procedure done to correct the fracture. So that procedure would have been an intramedullary rod in the tibia. So in long bones in the body, we have our compact bone, which is our sort of hard bone or outer covering. We've then got spongy bone or soft bone. And then in the center of long bones, we have this canal known as the medullary canal, where we have things like bone marrow and blood supply. And so what happens in the context of a tibial fracture a lot of the time is you put a rod down the center of that bone to allow the fracture to approximate and heal, and then provide good rigidity and stability for the fracture and the bone as it heals. And that rod will stay in there. Also, for the fibular fracture, there would have been a plate and a screw, well, more than a screw, usually 4 to 6 screws, depending upon how big the fracture is along the outside of the fibula. So there would have been 2 pieces of hardware put into the leg to help the fracture heal and ensure stability for the lower leg bones for the future. Now, post-operative instructions for this are typically your non-weight bearing for 6 to 8 weeks while the fracture starts to heal and the hardware starts to do its job in maintaining and creating some stability and fixation of the fracture. And then from that point, it's sort of progressive weight bearing and you start the rehabilitative process. And the rehabilitative process will vary largely, but it is, you know, looking at range of motion of all of the joints of that limb, looking at strength in isolation as well as strength in all of the patterns of that limb, and then starting back to basic strength training and then sport-specific exercise and so on. So in terms of specific guidelines for exercises, it's really going to be sport-dependent, dependent upon the age of the athlete. In this case, Connor's 32, depending upon access to care and all of this good stuff. The question is, you know, how long does this take to heal and how long before return to sport? So when we look at, you know, previous injuries, the one that we have is Anderson Silva's injury. Mind you, he was 6 years older at the time and the injury was back in 2013. And like I said at the top of the show, it took about 14 months for him to come back, but was never quite the same. Chris Weidman, who has the same injury, is just nowhere near to return right now, so it's hard to say what his full recovery would be. When you look at compound fractures requiring surgery, of a similar injury type, the recovery time is sort of cited at 4 to 6 months. Now, based on the nature of mixed martial arts and the fact that you are kicking with that leg as well as that leg is being kicked, I might expect it to be a little bit longer than that. And again, Anderson Silva was out for a year, so we might be looking at something more realistic, like 8 to 12 months for full recovery. But again, everything's dependent upon the athlete, the overseeing physician, and the circumstances and the context surrounding the injury and the recovery. The other question that really I have, or I've asked myself a couple of times as I was preparing for the show, was, you know, we've seen this now 3 times in the last 8 years, and why might this be happening? In Connor's case, was there an existing bony injury that may have led to some weakness? So was there a stress fracture in the tibia that may have led to some weakness and subsequently the injury itself? Was this just sort of a fluke where, based on the nature of the sport and the techniques that are used, and that people are kicking legs, people are going to break legs? And the fact of the matter is, we've just seen 3 at the elite level happen, and 2 of those have been in relatively short succession. And in fact, there isn't anything particularly specific about mixed martial arts versus any other sport that would make these injuries any more or less likely. There's always that conversation, in that sometimes things happen and it just so happens that we've seen this and there is no necessarily correlation. Now, we do know that this is part of the mixed martial arts sport, or even Muay Thai boxing or kickboxing. We know people do break legs. The question as well that I've asked other people that are well-versed in MMA is it related to sort of the technique change of the sport? We see that in sports, techniques become popular and then fade away. And we know that the lower leg kick in particular, or leg kicks in general, as the sport of MMA evolves, have become more popular in fighters. We also know that if you're using leg kicks throughout your career, well, we don't know this, but the conversation around things like bone density, either locally, is always a discussion. So if you've got more history of using leg kicks, might you have a greater bone density in the lower leg to begin with, and a little bit more resilient to leg fractures, versus if this is something where you've been a wrestler your entire life and now transitioned into the sport of mixed martial arts and never done a leg kick until you've entered the mixed martial arts arena, might your lower leg be regionally weaker than the person with a lot of history? So that's always an interesting kind of thought to have as well. Now, I guess the question is, will Connor be able to return to mixed martial arts in the same way that he was before? And we know that there was a lot of question marks around his career before this, and he had had a lot of downtime and appeared as though he wasn't quite as dominant in some of the fights that he returned to. So there might be other factors at play here, but I can imagine that if I were to see him inside of 6 months, I'd be very, very surprised. And I would expect that it may be 8 to 12 months before there's any discussion around him fighting again. Part of the reason is, post-surgery, you need to allow the hardware to set. You need to allow fixation to occur. A lot of this has to do with time that it takes for bone to heal. There might be a few things in the research that might help facilitate this process to some degree, but ultimately it does just take time and everyone's a little bit different. You then have to get all of your strength back without any post-surgical complications or rehab complications along the way. This might include just excessive time to heal. It might include injuries that are suffered as part of the rehab process. We know in terms of things like access to care, Connor is going to have the best access to care in the world based on his status as an athlete. And then the 2 other things that really come into play here are the sports psychology aspect and the motivation aspect. So Connor has many hundreds of millions of dollars. So is the motivation there at 32 to return to the octagon? and then the sports psychology aspect of coming back to a sport that you hurt yourself in and doing the techniques that got you hurt again, going through leg kicks, having confidence and the ability to take a leg kick and not be hesitant on your feet and have the full spectrum of all of your techniques available to you and being able to use those in a setting where you feel like you can win again. So this will be, as any injury where you're out for a really long period of time, we see this in ACL injuries, we see this in fractures and all of the other major injuries, where you're out of a professional sport for a long duration where all of the competitors that you're competing against are able to stay in there, grow, and improve their skills, it's very, very difficult to come back and compete at that same elite level because you are sort of vying for that top 1 or 2% of your sport in the world. So it's going to be very interesting to see what comes of both Chris Weidman and Conor McGregor in the months to around the year to come, see if they're able to get back and compete at the elite level that they did pre-injury. Because in my opinion, that would be quite the feat if they were able to come back and win in the same way or more definitively than they did pre-injury. It would be pretty remarkable having taken so much downtime and having to rebuild, not only physically, but mentally to be able to compete at such a level. So my question for you this week is, do you think Conor McGregor will return to mixed martial arts? And do you think he will compete at the level that he once did? I'd love to know in the comments below. As always, folks, I hope that you found this episode to be of value to you. Have yourselves a great weekend, and we will see you in the next one.